This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Darcy Nonemaker, Legislative Director, and Terry McHugh, Communications Director at the Washington Environmental Council, and Randy Abrams-Karras, Senior Campaign Director at the Washington Toxics Coalition. And all are members of the Environmental Priorities Coalition, a network of over 20 leading environmental groups in Washington State. Darcy, Carrie, and Randy are here today to report on how priorities for environmental legislation fared in the 2013 Washington State legislative session. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Would you begin by reminding us of the environmental community's priorities for the 2013 Washington State legislative session?
Yeah, so the Environmental Priorities Coalition is made up of more than 25 environmental groups from around the state. Every year we pick 3 to 4 priorities to advance in the legislative session. This year we had 3. We had one called Clean Energy Solutions, focused on climate change and smart energy measures to bring us forward when it comes to our energy supply. The second was called Conservation Works, which was focused on the capital budget and investments in natural resources statewide. And then the third was Toxic Free Kids and Families, which was dedicated to banning some harmful flame retardants in upholstered products and really setting the state on a smarter trajectory when it comes to toxics policy.
What were the political challenges in the 2013 Washington State legislative session?
Well, there was a state of flux in the beginning, not knowing who would be majority leader. Technically, the Democrats had a majority. However, Rodney Tom switched his allegiances, not his party, but his allegiances, and formed what he called the Majority Coalition Caucus. He and Tim Sheldon, another Democrat, formed a coalition, as they called it, with the Republicans, thereby creating really a conservative Republican majority in the Senate. And then we had the Democratic House and a new governor. So the beginning of the session was really about what's happening in the Senate. The House was all set up. They had all of their chairs and everybody was in place and they were scheduling things. And then in the Senate, nobody knew what was happening. Hearings weren't getting scheduled. Bills were trickling out, and then we didn't know who was chairing committees. But when they hit their stride, then the bigger challenges started because they were at odds with a lot of our priorities.
And this is Darcy. I'd say just another challenge or dynamic throughout session was the budget. Everybody knew that the budget was going to be a major focus, and getting into position as they were going into negotiations for the budget was a major challenge if you were having substantive policy discussions about how to take steps forward.
Before we go into more detail, would you give a brief overview of environmental legislation in the 2013 Washington State legislative session? What were the bright spots as well as missed opportunities?
So I think there were two important things that happened during the legislative session. The first was the passage of Governor Jay Inslee's Climate Action Bill, and that was a top priority of the new governor, and it set in motion a legislative and executive body to figure out how Washington State plans to meet its climate obligations that are set in the law book. The other was an unprecedented level of investment in capital projects for a natural resource. So that's, you know, projects to clean up Puget Sound, projects to make our forests healthier, and what else, Darcy?
Investments in recreation access through the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program, as well as a new system to reduce toxic stormwater runoff.
So I would say those were the two big bright spots. On the other hand, I think the legislature really missed several opportunities to do more to reduce our climate pollution and save money for consumers, as well as to protect our kids and families from toxic chemicals. These were solutions that were moving forward in the legislature, and they just did not act to protect our kids and families.
Let's speak now in more detail about the individual environmental priorities. How did the Clean Energy Solutions priority fare?
It was a mixed bag. On the one hand, as I mentioned before, there was the passage of Governor Inslee's Climate Action Bill, and that was a big deal and very exciting, and it sets up, I think, a good system which Governor Inslee and then 4 legislative leaders, 2 from the Senate, 2 from the House, 2 Republicans, and 2 Democrats, will meet to figure out how Washington State will meet its obligations. And they come together through this process that's facilitated by a California-based consulting group they've hired. And essentially what they do is figure out how we're going to meet Washington State's climate goals. And there's three chances for public comment. And so I know it's not the most incredibly engaging sounding process, but this is an important thing for people to know about. In October, there'll be two opportunities, one in Western Washington and one in Eastern Washington, for citizens to come out and express their opinions on sort of what the consultants have said about how to meet our obligations. And then at the end of the year in December, there'll be an opportunity to comment on the report that this group has put together. And so that'll be a great chance to see if you think what they've come up with is enough to, you know, meet the challenges of climate change. And the other really big result of this is that we have laws and statute that tell us sort of what our goals should be in terms of climate pollution reduction, but they were passed in 2008, and we don't know whether or not they're accurate now. And so what this does is it requires the University of Washington to study those limits and see whether or not they need to be changed based on the current science. So I think that's so important to have the current science reflected in our lawmaking. And so I think that should be done by the end of the year as well.
And if folks want to stay plugged into and updated on these public comment opportunities, they should visit our website, wecprotects.org, and we can keep them in contact.
In addition to the Climate Action Plan, would you speak about the other parts of the Clean Energy Solutions priority?
The Clean Energy Solutions package had three other components. One was an energy efficiency measure, which would have increased efficiency for water fixtures, battery chargers, and that would have, over several years, saved tens of million dollars for consumers. That, unfortunately, did not pass. There's also a measure that would have made solar power more accessible and affordable for citizens right now. And the costs make it hard for a lot of people who would like to get solar panels, even small businesses. It's just not within the realm of possibility for a lot of people. But unfortunately, that bill also didn't pass. And the final portion of the Clean Energy Solutions package was the big oil loophole. And that's an accidental tax loophole, which was passed in the 1940s and aimed at the timber industry. And now 98% of the benefit goes to the oil refineries in Washington State who are owned by big oil companies. And so that's $41 million each biennium that we're giving with no purpose to the oil industry. So we were asking the legislature to close that and direct those dollars towards education. We managed to pass that as a part of a bill through the House, but unfortunately we're not able to get any further. And I think that was a real missed opportunity because, you know, there was a bipartisan study of this tax loophole a few years ago, and there's no public policy purpose to it.
Would you go into detail about the clean energy programs funded in the capital budget?
The capital budget had a few energy pieces. One sort of grouping was a collection of energy efficiency measures. Anything from funding Washington State University and energy efficiency program to low-income weatherization for homes. And that was funded at a sort of base level in the capital budget, which we were happy to see. And then Governor Inslee had a package of clean energy investments that was also really critically important, and that was funded at about $40 million in the capital budget. So those were energy pieces in the capital budget that we were really happy to see.
Which clean energy rollbacks were prevented?
I think the most important defense was of our Renewable Energy Standard, Initiative 937, which was passed by the voters in 2006. And there were several laws that were proposed that would have weakened that standard, and ultimately we were able to prevent that from happening.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Darcy Nonemaker, Legislative Director, and Terry McHugh, Communications Director at the Washington Environmental Council, and Randy Abrams-Karras, Senior Campaign Director at the Washington Toxics Coalition. Our topic is environmental legislation in the 2013 Washington State Legislative Session. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Let's now go into more detail about the Conservation Works priority. How did the Conservation Works priority fare?
Yeah, the Conservation Works priority had two main parts. One was a package of investments for natural resources in the capital budget. And just to get a little geeky for a minute, the state budget, there's three state budgets. There's the operating budget, the capital budget, which funds projects, construction, those sorts of things. And then there's the transportation budget. So we focused on the capital budget with Conservation Works, focused on projects across the state. And those projects include restoration of Puget Sound, reducing toxic stormwater runoff, projects around conservation and recreation access through the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program, and then what we called forest health, which was a fairly broad category of habitat improvements, but also making our forests more resilient to forest fire and disease, especially in light of last year's devastating forest fires in eastern Washington. The second piece of the Conservation Works Priority was looking at dedicated funding accounts like the Model Toxics Control Act accounts, which are created to work on toxic cleanup sites around the state, for example. We want to make sure that the money in those accounts are going to those purposes. But since the recession started, we see the legislature dipping into those accounts to fill other general fund obligations. So we wanted to protect those accounts.
Would you go into detail about progress made in stormwater regulation?
Yeah, that's one of the real bright spots from session, and it's really exciting. For years, we've worked on getting a robust funding program in place for stormwater. This is our largest source of water pollution statewide, so not just in Puget Sound, but in Spokane, in Yakima, and lots of other places. So what we did this year was take a step back and focus on getting a new program up and running where we will have green infrastructure retrofits and other projects that reduce stormwater from the existing source of the problem, our current infrastructure and development. And we will have a list of projects that are rated and ranked and are fully vetted to make sure that we're dedicating money to the projects that give us the best bang for the buck. So this biennium, we have $100 million for stormwater projects in the capital budget, and we're working with local governments and partnering to really move forward on addressing this critical problem.
What support was given to the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program? Would you go into detail there?
Yeah, there was about $65 million provided for that program, and that is a good amount of funding. I think historically there was more funding when times were good. Over the last few years, that funding has been decreased, but this was actually a small bump up in funding this biennium, so we're really happy about that. This program's really important. It's a nationally recognized program. It's similar to the stormwater piece. It rates and ranks projects and then has a list based on how much money is available, a list of projects that can get done for whatever funding level. So we're happy to see that the $65 million amount is going to fund a lot of projects statewide and that the objective rating system for that program was maintained.
How much support did our Washington State Parks receive?
So the Washington State Parks did not receive as much funding as they need, frankly. There was a lot of discussion this year on funding state parks, and there was more dipping into accounts like the litter tax account, for example, to try and plug some of the holes in the state parks program. So I think there is, again, a base level of funding they're able to keep the lights on, but that's going to be an ongoing issue that we'll need to address.
Overall, what progress was made in protecting Puget Sound?
This is another bright spot in session. There's two restoration accounts in the capital budget. One is called Puget Sound Acquisition and Restoration, and the other is called the ESRP account. Those are basically very wonky names for accounts that are critical at improving salmon habitat, including nearshore habitat, cleaning up and restoring our rivers, lakes, streams, and marine areas. And historically, those have been funded at a much smaller amount. This year, due to amazing efforts by the Puget Sound Partnership, local watershed groups, there was a real effort to bring forward an ambitious set of large projects that needed to get done. So the funding was increased pretty substantially to about $80 million for those programs.
Let's go on now to the Toxic Free Kids Act. What happened there?
Well, ultimately, we did not get our bill to the governor this year. We wanted to ban chlorinated TRIS, which is a series of toxic flame retardants that have been used in furniture, in nap mats, in car seats, baby infant car seats, all sorts of products. And the byproduct of that can be dust. In addition to when they do burn, they cause a slow burn and release toxins in the air. So firefighters are especially vulnerable. And then when you just have them in your home, they create a dust just by being there. And children are exposed to them and they don't have the facility to process it. It stays in them. It can cause cancers. It's been demonstrated or it's been linked to all sorts of brain disorders, learning disabilities. So we wanted it banned. And this bill actually gave Department of Ecology the authority to ban it. And I'll step back and say that we were, I believe, the first state in the country to ban PBDE flame retardants. There was a loophole in that bill that didn't say as chemical companies replace these flame retardants that they shouldn't be as bad as PBDEs. So they produce new chemicals that are as bad as PBDEs. So this bill was meant to close that loophole and expand the authority of Department of Ecology to ban these kinds of chemicals. It passed in the House, and Representative Kevin Van de Weg was our champion on that. And we have a whole host of champions in the House. And Senator Sharon Nelson really was our stalwart in the Senate. But in the end, they gutted the bill in the Senate in that committee. And we were supposed to be part of a compromise. The Senate Majority Coalition was going to offer trades for our bill, and it never made it out. We had a lot of broken promises, I'll say that, to get the bill. But we are hopeful that we have had enough attention and will continue to mobilize our forces. We reached 27,000 people, had 2,000 communications with the legislature this past session, and we hope to do more to get this bill passed next session.
And I think one of the things that's most extraordinary about this effort is the coalition of people behind it. Randy, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the firefighters and
The firefighters are especially vulnerable to these chemicals, and we walked in step with them. The nurses, the Washington State Nurses Association, we have a whole coalition of children's advocates, of disability groups, who are all interested in seeing this passed. So they're still committed. This will be year four in trying to get this. And we also have a governor who is committed. So we will be back.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Darcy Nonemaker, Legislative Director, and Carrie McHugh, Communications Director at the Washington Environmental Council, and Randy Abrams-Karras, Senior Campaign Director at the Washington Toxics Coalition. Our topic is environmental legislation in the 2013 Washington State Legislative Session. Randy, would you say more about the implications of the bill not passing in the form that you had hoped?
Well, year after year, as long as we're allowing these chemicals to be in our furniture and our children's products, we're sacrificing the lives of our children and our firefighters for political brinksmanship. Honestly, there's no reason. This is not a partisan issue, and there's no reason why we shouldn't have a ban on these. There is no reason to have these toxic chemicals in our communities. And in addition, it poisons our waterways. Once they get out into garbage, into landfills, once they're incinerated, it has the capacity to destroy a lot of the environment, because we're seeing PBDEs in water, and we have some work coming up on that.
How do you plan to follow up?
We will be meeting with legislators from the House and the Senate. We'll talk about who wants to continue the fight, and it maybe we'll need some new energy, and we're letting everybody rest for a little while. We're also, you know, regrouping. Of course, we have to meet with Senator Tom and Senator Lizzo and the moderates of the Senate Majority Coalition Caucus to see where they are. We get a lot of, oh, yes, yes, you know, we support this. But in the end, they're not there. We did have the majority of the Senate Democrats, and if we had a few of the moderate Republicans, there's no reason why this bill couldn't have passed out of the Senate. And it's not a game. We're playing with people's lives here. So we won't be stopping. We'll be meeting, holding some meetings with these legislators, with their constituents. This is of great concern, not only to firefighters, but to moms and to veterinarians, because it has an adverse effect on kittens. You know, not just baby humans, but baby animals. So we have veterinarians who are interested in this, and doctors as well. So pediatricians and physicians for social responsibility. So we will have constituent meetings with these legislators and let them know that we're not going away. And neither are these chemicals.
Who was primarily against the bill being passed?
Doug Erickson, Senator Erickson, a Republican from Whatcom County. It was his committee where the bill went in the Senate, and he was responsible for amending it to ban chemicals that are useless and not used, and he gutted the bill. So that's what happened in the Senate. And in the end, it sounded like Rodney Tom was willing to make a deal, but in the end, it didn't happen. So all the promises were really not very useful.
Will you try again next year?
Absolutely.
So you've mentioned this before, but overall, what was most positive in regard to environmental protection in the 2013 Washington State legislative session? Just to kind of recap.
As Carrie said earlier, there were really two bright spots. One is the unprecedented investment that we see in natural resource projects across the state as part of the Conservation Works package. And then the other is getting off the couch and moving us to action when it comes to climate change.
And I think both of those really reflected Washington values. I mean, when you look at polling across the state, it's not a partisan issue. People love Puget Sound. They want to protect it. They want to restore it to health. And people feel some sense of urgency, especially in Washington, on climate change. You know, I think the news recently, especially with the tragedy down in Arizona, has added a layer of urgency for people who feel like we need to act. And the capital budget and also the governor's climate bill received bipartisan support. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping those are successes we can build on, you know, taking Washington values about action and about stewardship, about responsibility to our children, and moving that forward to environmental successes that'll benefit all of us.
And I'll just add that we saw unprecedented numbers in Olympia of just citizen activists coming to make their voices heard. And that can't be overstressed. It's really important for people to know what's going on and to show up.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point, actually. We've started looking at some of the numbers. We had 9,000 people emailing their legislators this year on these priorities. We had more than 600 people coming to our lobby day. I think this is an increase over what we've seen in recent years. And so the environmental movement, the environmental community is growing and moving to action, which is really exciting to see.
And again, to recap, what was most disappointing overall in regard to environmental protection in the 2013 legislative session?
I think there was a real theme of missed opportunity. There were realistic solutions that would have helped consumers and that would have benefited all of us, and the action just wasn't taken. And, you know, that's true for energy efficiency bills, for the solar bill that would have made it more accessible, for the toxics bill. I just think that there were chances to make the state a leader and make it healthier, and they weren't taken.
And I think the idea of just sticking with the status quo is really, really disappointing, because you see things like the accidental loophole, which has no policy purpose at all and not getting passed and closed. And on top of that, we saw more dipping into the Model Toxics Control Act funds to fill general fund obligations and cutting natural resource agencies and their capacity in the operating budget at levels that are just beyond the bone. And then, of course, the lack of action on toxics. We can't just keep going after chemical by chemical. We really need a smart system that helps us be more proactive when it comes to our health.
What is likely to be the focus of environmental priorities in the 2014 Washington State legislative session?
That is something we're obviously thinking about, since this session just ended about a week and a half or maybe 2 weeks ago. I think we're taking a bit of a breather. But, you know, things like climate, energy, Puget Sound restoration, stormwater, you know, water quality, toxics. There's a whole host of issues that are urgent and ready for action. And so we'll be going through that process to figure out how we put forward some smart priorities next year. One thing that I think we see every session is the idea of weakening our environmental regulations in the name of economic growth, or in a sort of pitch of economic growth. And that is something that we're going to continue to push on, that, you know, really we can make good choices about our economy and our environment, and that they really do go hand in hand. And so that's going to be an ongoing theme.
And what do you think about the political environment that's likely to be in place for the next session? Do you think it'll be similar to this year, or better or worse?
Personally, I don't see it changing in 2014. The next election cycle for state legislators is at the end of 2014. So next year, we'll have pretty close to the same makeup, I would expect. So, you know, I think we're in for another year of figuring out how to work together and where we agree and where we disagree.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think that the biggest message we could leave with is that state legislators listen to their constituents. So no matter how big an issue feels, you know, climate change can feel incredibly overwhelming. Your voice can make a difference. And I know it sounds incredibly corny, but it's very true. So it's always worth making a call. It's always worth sending an email. If you happen to run into your legislator at the farmer's market, that could be an incredible opportunity. So never think that your voice doesn't make a difference.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
You were just listening to Darcy Nonemaker, Legislative Director, and Carrie McHugh, Communications Director at the Washington Environmental Council, and Randy Abrams-Karras, Senior Campaign Director at the Washington Toxics Coalition. For more information, check on the web at wecprotects.org and watoxics.org. Again, that's wecprotects.org and watoxics.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archives section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on Listener Powered 90.3 FM and kexp.org.